But first up, it's our pleasure to welcome somebody who served our country proudly as a U.S. Army colonel. He saw extensive combat in the Middle East as a Special Operations Forces member. He is Lieutenant Colonel Sergeant Sangari. He has a very unique story. He was born and raised in Iran, came to the United States at age 10 after the Iranian Revolution. He went to college, joined the military, and he's still involved in the Middle East, and he serves as a policy advisor, among other things, in developing strategies that could actually help us the world over. Sarges, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, Andy.
Well, thank you for being with us. You've written extensively about this concept of backyard wars, and I would hope that you'd explain to our audience what is a backyard and describe the examples of backyard wars and how maybe we don't exactly fully appreciate the subject matter in terms of steering our foreign policy accordingly.
Well, sometimes foreign policy can become very complicated and difficult. So I was approached by the editorial staff of the Daily Herald in Chicago, and they said, you have a unique perspective on how foreign policy works. Will you be able to give us a couple of pieces on the op-ed so we can explain it to our readers? And the best way I looked at it was looking at it from a concept of how nations actually get involved in these foreign affairs. And the best way to describe it for a common person when it comes to foreign policy is just looking at it from a perspective of a backyard. For us, if you're a homeowner, you either have a backyard or you have a piece of property that you believe to be your backyard. And every time anything gets into those backyards, if you're in the country, if a critter gets in there or you have trespassers come in, you take certain steps towards them, because for us, the backyard is the extension of our homes. Well, the same concept applies for foreign powers, where you have U.S. looking at the entire South American region as being their backyard. You have Russia looking at the Southern Caucasus being their backyard. China looking at North Korea being its backyard. So when the U.S. tries to strike an economic deal or a nuclear deal with North Korea, China becomes heavily involved because for them is a threat against them. They see us trespassing into their areas. When we start working with nations that will affect the Southern Caucasus, Russia looks at it the same way. And when we try to have a policy in Venezuela, we don't like the fact that the Russians, the Iranians, the Chinese, the Cubans have their own version of what that area is supposed to be for them. So in this process where these major nations are jockeying as to defining what their role is going to be within the next 100 years, if not the next few decades, this is where a majority of the friction points take place and conflict develops. So if you look at it from that perspective, I think it's much easier for us to understand why foreign policy sometimes seems kind of disjointed when it comes to trying to have certain effects in certain areas within the region for the benefit of all.
You want to explain the relationship between, quote-unquote, backyard politics and wars and proxy wars?
Well, proxy wars is a limited viewpoint from my perspective, because when you look at it as a proxy war within our backyards, usually because we see other nation states as our backyard, in this case Venezuela. If we try to affect Venezuela or think that the Russians are coming in there, sometimes we see proxy wars taking place. This is where we choose a side in Venezuela, the adversary chooses another side there, and then we start funding and supporting those adversaries for our benefit in order to be able to either dislodge them completely or be able to be in a position of power where we control that particular nation state that we believe is our backyard. However, sometimes those nation states do not look at themselves as being a backyard nation. As an example, Iran has not become a backyard for the entire globe. You're looking at China being involved there, Russia being involved there, U.S. being involved there, Israel being involved there, EU being involved there. And in that process, as much as we view Iran and everybody on the stage views them as being their backyard and they don't want to have another nation affected, that nation itself sees itself as not a backyard nation. It sees itself as a neutral capability and views other nations as a backyard, hence why in Yemen, Saudi and Iran are fighting against each other using proxies.
So, for instance, though, to what degree does the backyard become the subject of a proxy war to mess with somebody? In other words, they say, okay, let's consider Syria as a backyard to Russia and or Iran. To what degree do we get involved in that just to mess with those other powers?
Unfortunately, it's sad to say that we do it sometimes just to say that we have a capability there. We do not do the long-term planning as to how do we want to resolve this. Look, at the end of the day, every single major conflict, whether it be a conventional local conflict, a civil war, internal conflict, or a nuclear war where we drop two nuclear bombs on Japan, ends up at the negotiation tables. War is a means and a way to get all the parties to an end product of a new treaty until that treaty is broken and the treaty has to be struck between major powers. That being the case is why sometimes we see ourselves involved in conflicts for a short period of time solely to be able to affect our adversaries. As an example, when Russia went into Afghanistan, we bled Russia to a point where Russia had to leave. With us being involved in Afghanistan, you could be assured that the Russians were not hesitant to ensure that we bled in Afghanistan in order to be able to take a toll back for what was initially done to them while they were in Afghanistan. So all these things historically tie into each other and really make it tougher to make decisions on a modern battlefield in today's foreign policy as it was maybe easier to do in the past.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Our guest, Lieutenant Colonel Sergeant Sangari, retired U.S. Army Colonel. You're listening to The Andy Caldwell Show. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Sergeants, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back again.
So we're talking about this issue of backyard wars having to do with smaller states of larger powers getting caught up in as an extension of the big states' interests, both local, national, and international. And I was wondering if you could explain this, how this works out vis-a-vis China, North Korea, and the United States.
Well, as I explained at the beginning of the segment, the state that we look at as being our backyard does not look itself as being a backyard state. And this is where the confusion takes place and some of the friction points happen, which tend to show us that we have a disjointed foreign policy when it comes to the major powers. If you look at North Korea, realized early on that given where it sat geographically, it was not going to be able to get the world policies to the table to fight on its behalf until it used the possibility of a nuclear weapon. And because of that, it started marching towards achieving the capability of a nuclear weapon for one reason only, to bring the world policies to the table for negotiations. And in this process, it constantly used China and U.S. to fight against each other when it came to North Korea. Every time North Korea did something, we blamed China. We blamed Russia because we said it's because of your guys' interests that North Korea is able to sustain and pursue this concept of what it wants to get its hands on, which is a nuclear weapon. Now, once it brought us to the table to negotiate under the current POTUS, it gave it an opportunity not only during the process to use that as a means of negotiations, but also to be able to establish its workforce at a point where it could be probably the next cheapest workforce that we might be looking at as far as the global markets are concerned. So North Korea is now in a position, if it is able to play the two giants against each other in a means and a way where it can become probably one of the richest, most prosperous workforces over the next 40 to 50 years. But during this process, there's a lot of polls that take place between what is happening with China and U.S. fighting over the tariff issues as far as who is going to come out as to controlling the European community economies over the next few years, or who's going to be able to develop the economies and the bazaars of Iran, which is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So all these maturations kind of feed to each other and explain why it is very important to understand how this concept of backyard wars works.
Okay. What I'm going to do is be the devil's advocate here with you. That North Korea has been known for three generations of dictators as the Hermit Kingdom. Some people call it the world's largest concentration camp. For it to emerge as a workforce for the United States or somebody else, the entire dynamic of that country would have to change. It would have to open up, and the people would have to have some level of freedom to go to work and enjoy prosperity and this, that, and the other. And most people look at it as a pawn of China, like a kind of a pit bull on the end of a leash of China, that China likes it messing with the United States and messing with other people to destabilize the region, versus them playing us and China and playing the United States and China off one another. What do you say about that?
Well, all of it is correct. There's nothing wrong here. It's just that from the perspective you're looking at it, from the perspective of North Korea, they would say we're playing the two against each other. From perspective of China, China's saying, well, we don't want to have U.S. here because U.S. is going to destabilize what we want to do within the region and in Asia completely over the next decade. And from the U.S. side of the house, if we do not get involved here, it's possible that we may not have a freeze on these nuclear weapons and nuclear technology being transferred. Because of that, I think if these three dynamics come to the table and sort of push against each other, try to work for each other's benefits, everybody within that backyard can benefit something, to include at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, and it's hard to kind of understand the concept, economy runs the show. And as far as the U.S. is concerned, China is concerned, and other companies are concerned that are used by our consumers, nobody cares if somebody in North Korea is being oppressed as long as those workforces are able to produce the items that we want for our benefit. That's the sad part of it, but that's just the reality. Nations have gone to war because of this. If you take a look at what's happening in Syria, the number of refugees that were taken by Germany into its borders was really sucking in a workforce possibly for the future development of Syria. It had more to do with that for the German perspective than had anything to do as far as them caring about security issues and what is happening to those individuals who are dying in Syria. This is how nations look at things. There's an ugly fact to it, but it's at the end of the day, their economy and the prosperity of the people takes hold over everything else.
Okay, let me ask you, go back to Iran. Are the sanctions working, i.e. is it weakening the Ayatollah and that regime, and will the people revolt as they tried to do in their version of quote-unquote Arab Spring, although I know they're Persians, not Arabs? Will the people revolt and this time get support from Trump and the rest of the Western world?
The Persian is completely a different mindset than the Arab. The Arab Spring, as you said yourself, has been a failure in the Arab community. Why?
Right.
Because it's still tied to Islam.
Right, I
now,
agree.
If you say, well, Islam, also Iran is an Islamic nation, yes, but Iran, before it adapted into Islam, was an actual major power. Fought against the Greeks, fought against the Arabs themselves. It had a cultural background to it, and the Arab mindset, when it ran into the Persian, it has still to this day never been able to understand it. That's the reason why you have the Shia of Iran and the Arab Sunnis constantly at conflict with each other. They just don't mesh culturally. Now, the sanctions would work faster if our European partners, to include England, Germany, and France, were not constantly undercutting us. Even to this day, as much as they say, well, we're here to support, we're going to ensure that their sanctions are placed against Iran. At the same time, they'll turn around and find ways to circumvent those sanctions. Why? Because they care about the economy and their freedoms more than they care about U.S. strategic policy within the region. And those nations also want to be able to have a complete say in the future of Iran. I'll give you an example on England. England has given open visas to the family members of all the majors and above who are in the Iranian army. It has educated those individuals in the West. It has done that. Why? Because it knows that in the future there's a regime change based on the fact that it educated the sons and daughters of those multi-personnel. It can have more leverage than U.S. would with their Iranian-Americans in a future government of Iran, controlling the economy of Iran more to their benefit than to the U.S. benefits and markets. So this needs to be taken into consideration. I think what the president is doing today is he's put the moderates and the hardliners against each other. Frankly, whoever comes to the table first to negotiate is going to be the winner in this case. And from the U.S. perspective, I don't think we care whether it's the moderates or the hardliners that we make a deal with, as long as we make a deal with them
for
the benefit of securing Israel and ourselves.
Sergeants, I want to thank you for being on the show, and thank you for serving our country.
Thank you very much for the time and opportunity, and thank you for the service you provide to the nation.
All right. Lieutenant Colonel Sergeant Sangari, you're listening to the Andy Caldwell Show.